Hello and welcome back to the Life Without Limits podcast. I'm your host, Yogi Roth, and here we go again. Another really fun conversation here in season two. Season two of this podcast, as you know, not only explores the idea of what does it mean to be human, but hopefully also gives us tools and gives you tools as a listener of how you can apply, how to go forward, how to charge, how to take risks, and give you different lessons that you can apply to your life along the journey that we're all on. The last couple convos have been really fun. They were international, right? We took you to the beaches of Tel Aviv with Kati Cohen, which was really fun. I heard from so many people. In fact, one of the listeners was inspired by her story and is actually taking her first solo trip to Nicaragua in a week or so. So thank you, Kati, for that conversation. Then, of course, last week was Jonathan Baruch, a friend of mine. We recapped our adventures in Israel, and you're going to see a lot more of that here in the coming weeks at YogiRoth.com. Got some really cool short films that are going to be coming out on Israeli football. Yes, they have American football in Israel, and it's awesome. Men, women, tackle, flag. It was really cool. The stories were mind-blowing, as you might imagine, and the power of play and the idea that we all speak ball is completely legit. I also have a short film coming out in the same vein of the one that we did titled What Does It Mean to Be Human around Inauguration Day. This one is called What Does It Mean to Love? And that'll come out in a couple weeks. So I will make sure to keep you posted on the podcast as well as all social media. And of course, everything can be found at YogiRoth.com. Now, let's get to today's conversation because it was a really fun one. It's got an international vibe to it, and it's Mark Pattison. You may know the name. He was a former student athlete at University of Washington in the Pac-12 conference. He was a really gifted player there, grew up in that community, made it to the National Football League and played there for a little bit. And when his career ended, like all of us athletes or all of us in any walk of life, whether you're just a high school athlete or whether you're transitioning from a business to a different profession or even in relationships as you transition, that transition is always really unique. For his, he describes it so vividly. Basically, he's walking around the block in Santa Monica, and one day he just asks himself, how did I get here? And that process of that question of how did I get here, as he was going through a lot in life, got him to the question of what am I going to do about it? And he literally made the decision that he was going to dedicate his life to climbing, and not just climbing little hills or little mountains, but the summits around the world. There's seven big time ones. He's already trekked four of the seven, and he will become the first former NFL player to climb all seven summits when he reaches his goal. And we met in his town in Hermosa Beach, and we talked about his most recent adventure, which is going to be hiking Mount Kilimanjaro. And he did it with a really cool organization that you definitely need to look up. It's called Water Boys, and you can find it at waterboys.org. It's all going to be linked in the blog post. And he did it with one of his best friends and former teammates, UCLA head coach Jim Mora, and a bunch of other people. And Water Boys is really cool. Their goal is to fundamentally build 32 water wells in East Africa while empowering veterans. And why 32? Because it represents the 32 teams in the National Football League. He's got incredible storytelling skills. His tone is one that I think just brings you in. And listening back to it, I felt like I was there with him. I felt like I was on the sidelines with Don James. I felt like I was walking Mount Kili with him. He's got a great philosophy. He calls it summits. He'll take you through it. It's a very unique approach, I think, where you can get yourself to the peak of a goal and how you find success. He leaves you with many nuggets. I think you're going to be taking notes throughout this entire time. But overall, while we may not have the desire or the means or whatever to go hike one summit, let alone four, let alone seven, I think the idea that we're all climbing, we're all seeking, we're all on this journey to explore what makes us feel most alive is what Mark Pattison hits on. It's a beautiful conversation, one of my funnest I've had in this podcast. So I'm getting out of the way. Welcome to Hermosa Beach as we drop into Mark Pattison's dojo, and we talk about how the NFL, University of Washington, and a simple walk around the block led him to where he is today. Peace. Oh, that's right. Life Without Limits podcast is on the road. We're in Hermosa Beach today. This is an amazing place. I'm fired up for this conversation. Joined by Mark. Mark, thank you for taking the time today. I really appreciate the time of you welcoming into your house. This is the first time we've done one from someone else's home.
Yeah, well, I don't have a studio, so that'd be a challenge. And so we could either go to the beach, which would be cool, but, you know, next to the beach is the next best thing.
So this podcast, and I love this because you don't know a lot about it, so I'm pretty pumped about this conversation, and it explores one question, and it's what does it mean to be human? And the only rule that I have in this conversation is that I can't ask a question I know the answer to. So I do all this research. I Google. I got a chance to talk to one of your daughters last night, which was really fun to kind of do some homework. But everything has to come from a core curiosity with me. So my first question for you is a guy who played big-time high school football. You were an All-American in Seattle as a wide receiver and quarterback, which is pretty impressive. Then you go ball out at UW under one of the most historic coaches of all time. We're going to get into all this, play in the National Football League, and then decide to fall into this career of climbing. So I ask you, the first question of this podcast is, what do you think it means to be human?
You know, that's a really big question. And I think, you know, this has been my life, so I don't look at it from a, this is super remarkable. It's just the course and the journey that I've been on. Really to understand how I got into mountain climbing is to really understand that, you know, sometimes the package looks nice and shiny, but on the inside, there's a lot of things going on. And 5 years ago, I was going through a really tough personal, you know, period of my life. And I was at a really core, you know, bad place. And I remember for a couple of years, I'd walk around our block. And at the time, I was living in Santa Monica. And I just kept asking the question, how did I get here? How did I get here? My, you know, thousands of friends, it seems like, that I have up in Seattle, totally connected. I belong to a bunch of things up there. And now I'm in Santa Monica. I've got one friend, and my best buddy is my dog, my chocolate lab. And so after a couple of years, I changed that question from how did I get here to what am I going to do about it? And so when that hit, you know, it really opened my eyes to possibilities, not, you know, my life is doomed. And so I knew I had one last great athletic thing that I wanted to do. I just couldn't figure it out. And so, you know, I was just like, what can I still do? So I couldn't play football, obviously, but I'd been climbing growing up in the Northwest, a lot of with my good buddy Jim Mora. And it was just like, you know what? I want to become the first NFL player to ever climb the seven summits. And so that's where this whole journey started. So out of this whole thing, which has been amazing, and so you're asking this question about, you know, what is it to be human? If that was your question. I've been on this path now. I've now climbed four. I'm going back to Tanzania to climb Kilimanjaro with a group, and then up to Alaska to climb Denali. And it's been amazing the amount of people have reached out to me saying how inspiring it is about what you're up to. And in addition to that, now I'm helping out with some raising money for some different charities. And so the effect that just this one decision of starting to climb mountains has had this ripple effect on other people. And, you know, and in fact, you know, through raising money and funds to provide other access to people in need. So it's just been this, you know, like you put it out there and what's come back.
That's fascinating. I mean, think about all of us have those moments when we walk around our block or our beach or our basketball court, and how did I get here? What happened in my life? Where I'm at? And I think we ask that at a variety of stages. So I want to go back to the stage of you being a high school athlete, because a wide variety of people listen to this podcast, including some high school quarterbacks from the Elite 11. You've been around the opening, etc. And you were the dude. You were that guy in that era. What drove you then in your eyes? And is there a tie to it now as you're continuing this pursuit to climb all seven summits as the first former NFL player to do so?
Well, the answer is yes. And so, you know, I think, again, a lot of times people look at athletes who make it through, and I'd get these comments, you know, back in the day of like, oh, you're so lucky or you're whatever. And they didn't really understand what it took to get to that place. In high school, I was a gym rat, but I wouldn't say I was like super dedicated to my craft. I was just always had a ball in my hands. I was running around and playing basketball and doing, you know, whatever was going on that particular day, but not like now where they really put the hardcore dedication, running hills, running sprints, all the other things, the little things that really make up the difference. And for me, it was really a wake up call, because in high school, I could just get by on just being me. You know, I didn't, again, put that much thought in. I felt like I was born with a football in my hands. I just had those instincts, and I was just better at that time. And then I end up getting a scholarship to the University of Washington, and I pretty much just show up on opening day of training camp. And I looked around and I was like, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? Because I looked around and now you've got these well-developed kids who are 21, 22 years old, gunned up, but they're emotionally, physically, and spiritually ready to play ball. And I was not in that place. And so it was like a come to Jesus moment. And it actually happened about midway through my freshman year. And I remember sitting in my dorm room and I was just like distraught. And it was just like, I'm not going anywhere. And what am I going to do about it? And it was like, you got two choices. You either need to get your ass in the weight room and become completely committed to your craft, or stop playing, because there's no middle ground, and you're going to flame out quick, and you're just going to be like another guy that's gone through. So, I mean, it's all about that hard work and dedication and really having your eye on the ball, what you're trying to get accomplished.
You've climbed 4 of the 7 peaks. Have you felt that? Was that moment again of, okay, we're about to plateau here, or my lungs are feeling the altitude, or whatever you feel? And I want you to describe later about what it's like to climb those. But I wonder if you ever went back to a moment of, okay, I get to decide now, am I going to continue this climb or am I not?
I think something that, again, going back, you'd mentioned in your opening, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, and I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to go around the country and play at a lot of different universities. And the one that I chose happened to be in my own hometown. And as it would all play out, it came under the, now he's passed away, but Hall of Fame coach, Don James. And so what Don James had done is he had taken on the principles of John Wooden's Pyramid of Success. And so it's this whole notion of 23 different blocks of really, you know, if you want to go to the pinnacle, and that, you know, for us in those days was the Pac-10 championships, the Rose Bowl. There's all these little things, you know, the classroom, the weights, getting faster, stronger, know your plays, all these things to get you to that place. And so what I did when I started climbing these mountains is essentially create my own pyramid. So I've got 7 principles in that pyramid. And again, it's just like, it was the idea, it's your purpose, why you're doing this, and then, you know, get going. And that's part of the training, and where are you going? You know, so it's all part of the, to get you to that pinnacle. And what I've found, especially on those tougher mountains, is on every one, there has been some defining moment where, you know, the second mountain, I was in Russia and we ran into an awful lightning storm and a person was killed, struck by lightning.
In your group?
In our group. When I was in Argentina, on a mountain called Aconcagua, it's 23,000 feet. This last year, we started with 12 and only 6 made it. And it was almost from day one, you could see who was going to make it and who wasn't. You just had an idea just because of people taking shortcuts and they weren't taking all the steps you needed to take. And as we got higher and higher in the mountain, we were flying people off left and right in these rescue helicopters. So, you know, there's something to it. And again, you can't just show up. You show up and you will not make it. And sure enough, that's how it played out.
Yeah, showing up. I mean, what a great analogy. It's only part of it, right? Like, I mean, that takes courage in and of itself, but then there's the part of digging in. When you were a player for the Dogfather, right, a lot of love for him, obviously, and what he did there, did his pyramid sink in, or was it until after your maybe NFL career when you're like, wow, okay, these 23 pillars, I'm going to start looking at it? Or maybe was it when you were 50 and you were walking around Santa Monica?
No, it kicked in back then, and you know, I was talented, but you know, they're talking about all these star ratings today, and maybe, and I can't remember what mine was, but we'll call it a 3. You know, whatever.
Oh, you would have been a 5. You were an All American. Come on,
no,
man.
Yeah, but you know, really, there's a lot of guys who are really good, and I came in. I know that I was 6'2", 181 pounds. I could not bench my weight, so I'll never forget that. And I left there, you know, being able to bench 350 pounds. So it in that, you know, that's not by taking a pill or steroids or something. I mean, that's peanut butter and jelly and a lot of hard work, right? And lifting and being committed. And I just knew, I saw the guys that were on the path had gone into the NFL, and I saw the guys who were flaming out and burned out from injury or dedication or, you know, school, or they got in trouble or something. And it was just like, I don't want to be that guy. I did not want to be that guy. So, you know, taking those steps, paying attention to detail, all those little corny things that they used to say, you know, he was right. And sure enough, every year, you know, my first 2 years, we went to the Orange Bowl or the Rose Bowl. My last year, we went to the Orange Bowl. And the other 2 years I was there, we should have gone to the Rose Bowl, and we lost to the Cougars, back to back years. But you know, we were always right in the game and at the plate to be, and it's because of those principles. And fortunately, I was one of those guys that was up front.
When did you take those principles to the next level? You know, like I remember when I was at SC with Coach Carroll, like he had a philosophy, again, adopted from a lot of influence from Coach Wooden. And I think players, when you talk to them then, they got it. And the further and further removed they got away from the game and even into their own professional careers or fatherhood, it was, wow, yeah, you really do have to compete in everything. I get what he was saying in practice now. For you to make the transition into climbing, did they take on another meaning for you? Because somewhere you had to create these seven pillars of your own that didn't just come out of thin air.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it for sure, it didn't just show up back at climbing. You know, it's followed me throughout my career path and certainly getting into the NFL. And again, I was a seventh round draft pick by the LA Raiders, and I came down here and they'd already drafted a guy in the first round and the third round, right? And so it was a hard go, and I had to go. I mean, it was like everything in the tank in that desire, like you're going to die or you're going to make it. It's black and white. It's one of the two. And I was so focused, and you got to get rid of all the other junk. You know, you'll never make it. I had people come up to me, to my friends come up to me and say, you'll never make it. Mm-hmm. And you'd hope that, you know, some of your friends are the most, you know, committed, loyal, supportive people out there, and in some cases that wasn't the case. So, you know, really, are they my friends? But, you know, it's just like a lot of things, even up to mountain climbing, pain is temporary. You know, when you're at 19,000 feet and it's 40 below zero and you're sleeping on rocks and your tent is, you know, feel like you're gonna blow off the mountain, it's just like, man, you know, you gotta dig in and you gotta really go back to just those things like training camp, right? Of you know, pain is temporary. You're going to get through it, and you just got to get to the other side, right? And just really have that mental state to get you there. It's also followed me in business, you know, too. You know, obviously you're not 40 below, but there are market conditions where I'm out raising money, and you know, payroll and this and that, or getting down to a certain place where it's just like, how am I going to do this? And you just got to like mentally, you know, weather the storm and get through it.
So, what are your seven pillars?
Well, it's really all revolved around this word that means a lot to me, summits, right? And if I can remember them all right now, but, you know, the S is really about the seed, and that's really about the why you're doing anything in life, right? So it doesn't have to be necessarily applicable to climbing mountains, but, you know, anytime you walk out the door and you want to have that, you know, sense of why you are broadcasting or climbing mountains or playing football or whatnot, you know, you need to have that purpose. You need to have that desire, yeah, like I did way back when, or it's not going to happen, right? The second one, the U, is really represents unleash. And unleash is, okay, now that you've decided on what your why is, you know, what's your game plan? You know, how are you going to attack this thing as you go forward? The next one is an M, and it's all about movement. Okay, now you got to get your ass in gear, get your feet off the floor or on the floor, and start walking and doing, so in my case, training, right? This morning I was down at the gym at 7 this morning. I'm doing all kinds of stuff I'd rather not do because I'd rather sleep in. But that's not going to get me into my next spot. Next one, next M is measure. So, again, in that same path, you got to make sure that what you're doing is working, right? If it's not working, it's not happening. And so you got to make sure that whether you're trying to lose weight or lift more, or I don't know, I mean, whatever that is, you know, whatever that metric is for you, you got to make sure that you're in a way that you can actually track that stuff. The I then would represent improve. Okay, so now that you're out the door, you're measuring things, you're moving things, now you got to make sure that you're improving, right? Because if you're not growing, you're dying.
Right.
So that's what the I is. So T is traverse. So now you're going, everything seems great, and now you blow your leg out or something. So what are you going to do? My freshman year, Jim Mora, we were teammates at the University of Washington, he broke my foot. The only time through my entire career.
Come on, coach.
He broke my foot. He tripped. He fell his big ass right on my foot. He broke it. I was in a cast for 6 months. Awful. So, things happen and you have to make new decisions, and that doesn't mean that you have to alter you have to change your course completely or quit. It just means you have to, alter what you're doing. When we're at the top of the mountain, when these storms come in, you got to change your course. So those things happen. And then once you've gone through that, now you've hit you've gone through your summit. Now you're on your S. And to me, that's success. That's the summit. And at that point, to me, it's really about paying it forward. So paying it forward to me is all about going back and teaching people what it took to get to that magic point. And then also, if you can, be in a position to pay it back and pay it forward, like we're doing with the Waterboy organization down in Kilimanjaro, or down in Tanzania this week, with raising money to build water wells for the people of Tanzania.
That's fascinating. I have so many questions off of that. let's jump into the Water Boys project that you're working on.
Sure.
This is really cool. I mean, it's you and Coach Mora, Nate Boyer, Christy Ennis, who's a former Marine. I've heard from multiple people that were at your event 2 weeks ago. I wasn't in town, couldn't go to, but just inspired by everybody's story. And the idea, or at least from my understanding, is that the goal is to create 32 wells to represent 32 teams in the National Football League. And just to paint a picture of everybody, imagine the dirtiest water in the history of your imagination. Now multiply it by 10, and that's what people in a lot of these communities are drinking, cleaning, cleansing themselves with. And you guys are going to go there and raise awareness and raise money to continue to build these wells. When you've heard about this project by Chris Long, it was created by him, the NFL player, what was your first thought? Because you had seen places before. You had already traversed multiple summits. Clearly, you're an explorer. What was the first reaction for you when you heard about this project?
Well, the first thing was that I was disappointed in myself that I hadn't come up with this great idea, right? Because it is a great idea. I have been to Tanzania. I have seen these people, and I have seen mostly women walk around with 3-gallon buckets, looks like Gatorade buckets on their head, walk for 2 miles to go get awful water, bring it back, boil it, distill it, and then try to drink it. And it's amazing. Right. And so it's a beautiful culture of people that just don't have the resource. So, for us, you get up and walk over to the sink and twist a button and, you have water. And for them, it's just a major ordeal. So to be a part of this whole organization, to go down there, and they've built 17 wells. We're actually going to visit one of the villages, and I think they're going to turn on the water, and it's going to be a big celebration, and it just saves a lot of lives and keeps people. I mean, we take it for granted, but, dirty water, it just, spreads disease and kills, just tons of people. And so down there, it's a real problem. So, Jim and I partnered on this particular as part of the greater organization, and they asked us to raise $15,000. We've raised $31,000. So I think Jim and I are really excited about our contribution towards this. I mean, the mountain's going to be great, but really spreading awareness to all the different people that we've been able to be in contact with, and fortunate that, our network has been very generous with their money to support what we're trying to do.
It's going to be a magical trip. I mean, he's literally leaving later this week. How do you prepare for an ascent? And I'd love you to go back to your first one, because there's a lot of people listening who say, all right, I'm inspired. I want to go hike. I want to go climb. You can't necessarily, you can recreate third down all out blitz, right? You can recreate football scenarios. You can't recreate crazy storms in the top of a mountain when shit hits the fan.
Yeah.
So curious your mental and physical preparation when you first started, and then maybe even the growth of where you are now as you're about to take off.
Well, I think, there's a lot to it, that question. So, there's nothing that ever replaces climbing mountains other than going and climbing mountains, right? So you can't get the same type of stress on your body as you do when you go and you're on a Stairmaster, right? So what people don't realize is that the harder part of coming down for your body is more going down, not going up, just because your quads are so stressed. And they can really hurt after a couple of days, like daggers are in them. So, you know, really trying to put yourself in a position where, you know, you've got some really downhill, good downhill grade where you're stressing them out and you bulk them up. So that's certainly one. Having the right kind of equipment. You know, if your feet are cold, they're wet, whatever, it's going to be a long day and it's going to be really tough. And it just, you know, once your body goes, your mind goes and it's all over. And so making sure that you have the right type of equipment, you're going to keep warm, you know, you have the right type of guide that's been there, their experience that can really guide you and advise you on what to bring and what you're in for, potentially when you get up on these mountains. And then the third is just, I think, is just, it's just genetics, right? I mean, why does Lance Armstrong, you know, minus the steroids, but... you know, he just, his lung capacity to go up mountains was just much greater than what other people with seemingly the same ability could do. And my chemistry is just set where so far I haven't had any kind of issues on high altitude mountains. So, you know, we actually, we're up on Aconcagua last year. We got up to 17,000 feet, which is still pretty high. You know, the top of Mount Rainier is 14.5. And there was a doctor up there, there was a little village, and we each had to have our oxygen level checked. And, you know, the next closest age to me was half my age in there, yet I had the lowest, you know. Oh. So resting heart rate and everything else, right? So that doesn't make me like Superman or anything. It's just, it takes... For whatever reason, my body, it just takes a lot less energy to go up a mountain than what other people can do.
Do you meditate? Like, what's your mental training? Because there's a lot of quiet time on these walks, I'm sure, and you got to prepare yourself. Curious how you do that.
Yeah, no, I don't meditate in the sense of I sit down for 20 minutes and go through that, although a lot of people do. My ex-wife is a big believer of that. And, you know, there's no question. Really, for me, it's when I go and I work out, I put my headphones in, and I a lot of times what I do is, whether it's music or I listen to a lot of inspirational stories. And that's, to me, I get totally focused in on that's the only thing that's going on in that moment. And that seems to really help me with the mental. And the other part of that is just, you know, over time through experience of being stressed when you're playing in Pittsburgh or, you know, being on these mountains or whatnot, and all the other climbing I've done. I mean, Jim and I have climbed in the Northwest, you know, one particular mountain probably 150 times.
Wow.
And, you know, just, and that's year round, and that's in the snow, and that's in the rain and all kinds of stuff, and just putting yourself in those stress situations.
Right. Has there been a low moment for you on one of these adventures?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first one, and it was actually a pretty magical moment. I took a lot of pride in probably the first 6 days of always being, you know, the first one out of camp, and I was always way ahead, and they'd put a special porter with me ahead of the other guys in the group, and I'd always, you know, arrive in camp, you know, the next camp first. You know, another one of those learnings that we go back to is about my nutrition. That's a huge, huge thing, because the higher you go in the mountains, you're burning all these calories, but your appetite gets suppressed. Mm. So it's almost like you have to force these things down, and then you're getting up, you know, especially on summit day, and you're climbing at 2 o'clock in the morning. So it's just hard to like have a big breakfast and then let's go out at 2 o'clock in the morning when you've just gone to bed at 10. Right. And so, on summit day on Kilimanjaro 5 years ago, same deal, got out of the gate, got probably an hour in front of everybody else, and all of a sudden I lost all my energy. So we're on the side of this mountain, I've got my headlamp on, it's pitch black under the stars, and my guide was like slapping me in the face and trying to jam some protein bars down my mouth, and I was gone. All I wanted to do was just lay down and sleep, and I just, like, I don't know if I can do it, and just, I was gone. So finally got me back up, and I got walking, and ultimately I got to the top, and, you know, and it was awesome, and as I was coming down, I probably hadn't cried in 35 years, I don't know, and this is bucket of tears were just running out of my face, and a lot of that was just going back to that whole moment about walking the dog around the block of, how did I get here, to what am I going to do about it, to overcoming these difficulties in life, that, you know, I can do it. And I got through that moment, and it just like opened everything else up. And then when I came down to our high base camp at 15,000 feet, there were probably 12 porters waiting for us. And they all ran over, and they got in a circle around me and did some African chant dance, and they all celebrated my success. And that was just such a huge breakthrough for me that, you know, if I can get through that, I can get through anything.
Wow. That's, I'm just picturing it.
Yeah.
What is it? This is an obvious question, but what's it like at the top?
Top's awesome. You know, there's a old saying by, there's a guy who I've climbed with, probably the most famous American who has said this correctly: when you get to the top, you're only halfway there. And most of the accidents happen when you're coming on your way back down.
Mm.
Because you're so fried. You've been climbing now for 12 hours, and you're limited food, limited water. The conditions at the top are always pretty severe. So, you know, you'd think you'd be up and you'd hang out for quite a while. And honestly, you know, you're taking pictures and whatnot, but after about 20 minutes, you're like, okay, let's get out of here, because you still got a long way to go.
Wow. Do you take a, I mean, I'm sure you do, but when you take your moment, right, you've been to four, you're going to repeat offender here and go to Kili here in a couple days. Do you take your moment when you're up there? And what is that like, if you could take us inside? Because, okay, I get it. You're only halfway there. Now you're a veteran, and you know what you got to do, and you got to descend, and it's not going to be easy. You want to make sure you don't want daggers in your thighs. But what's your moment like when you're there, and it is your, you know, headphones in your ear, training, meditative moment like?
You know, I think for me, it's about all the hard work I put in to getting here. And, you know, in the bigger picture of trying to climb the 7 summits in the world, you know, the satisfaction of I've made it and I've got another one under my belt. And I'm so thankful and happy about that. A lot of times there might be, you know, people, I've got a lot of friends who, you know, are plenty strong enough mentally and physically, but because of the weather conditions, they just couldn't get to the top. And so a lot of that is just, is actually for me, as I go, I tend to get stronger. And, you know, when I sense that we're close to the top and I just have that feeling like I'm for sure going to make this thing, I'm not going back, you know, it's exciting feeling, because you just have that confidence, right, that you're going to make it.
Does it compare to, if you rewind now, of when you guys won a big bowl game, would you finish number 2 in the country one year, that feeling of accomplishment, or is it a much more mature feeling of accomplishment?
Well,
I'm curious
if you're
trying to recreate it.
Well, I guess climbing is a sport, right? So, I mean, technically, you know, so is football, obviously, but, you know, there's nothing that ever captures playing football in the Orange Bowl, catching the last second, winning the game, then athletics, right? Because it's unpredictable. You don't know how it's going to go, and it's in the moment. And you just can't get that, because it's, you know, I'm on the mountain for 3 weeks, right? I mean, when I'm going up to Denali, and I leave on the 6th of May, and I come back the 29th of May. And they've got a lot of days in there for built in that we have to dig, you know, snow huts, snow caves, and crawl in. Right, because of the potential weather.
How do you prepare to build a snow hut? Well, we're in SoCal. There ain't any snow here, man.
No, there's not a lot of snow down here, but it is what it is, you know. So there's going to be 6 climbers and 3 guides, and we've got a lot of equipment. And that one will be a mother, because we've got to pull 60 pounds on a sled. So you've got a harness around your waist, then you've got another 60 on your back. Because we're here in the U.S. and there's no porter or Sherpas.
Right.
Right? And we even had mules down in Argentina. So we had dozens of mules that we had. We had all of our gear, and they took it up to about 16,000, 17,000 feet, and then we'd shuttle it back and forth. So, you know, it was limited. And in this case, we have to pull these sleds with all this weight on our back up to 17,000 feet. So it's a long way to go, right?
Have you seen Maru? The film?
I have, great.
Right, yeah. So there's this, and we'll link it in the blog post, but the opening scene of Maru is like one that just blew my mind. Yeah. And they're in this tent on the side of this mountain, and they're just kind of suspended in air. And when I watch it, of course, you're breathtakingly in awe of the visuals. And then you're curious, like, holy sh, why would they do that? But to me, my question for you is, what are the people that love you most think about when they hear, oh, yeah, I'm going to go, I got to dig this snow hut. I'm going to go do something that's never been done before, because that's what you're doing right now as you climb these seven summits. And how do you process that?
Well, I think, first of all, to my mother and my kids and whatnot, you know, I give them the information that they need, which is I'm with. That they need, which is I'm with a really safe climbing group. They've got an excellent, you know, safety record. And you know, I've done everything I can to prepare. And the bottom line is, this is my love. This is my passion. Right. And so just like I'd always want them to follow their dreams. Right. And so I don't look at it from the negative side. And I know a lot of people, when they start talking about, you know, extreme mountaineering, it's more the dark side of, you know, you're not coming back. And I'm not preparing for that. Right,
right? Of course.
I'm preparing for success. And, you know, the summit is always optional. And if I don't make it now, I'll come back and do it again. But I want to make sure I do it and do it in the right way and make sure I'm safe. And the guys that I climb with IMG, you know, their safety record is off the chart. And, you know, I'm willing to pay more money to be with the best than... You know, that's one time in my life I don't want to, like, you know,
agreed,
shortchange, you know, what I'm trying to do.
Is there a, you know, there's this phrase in, like, the high performance psychology world of, you know, inviting the lion or the dragon in to the room, but learning how to pet it. And in this instance, it would be the dark side, right? Is there a side of you that's like, yeah, I look at that with an admiration of, wow, what a great opportunity I get to even attempt this ascent? And I'm wondering how you've processed that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just, it seems like as I get more and more and more experienced at climbing these different mountains and putting on crampons and roping up and, you know, ice axe and all this, the more confident I'm getting. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is because of what I'm being exposed to. And the fact is I'm just getting more confident because of my skill level, right? I also, you know, I think of the unfortunate people that have been in the wrong place at the right time, that there's been a little bit of bad luck, but a lot of bad judgment. Like the whole issue that came up in 1996 with Into Thin Air. I mean, at those times, they didn't have the technology where they have the radar and they could see, you know, these storms coming. And in that particular case, you had a whole bunch of people that were climbing in a superstorm, not just a storm, but a superstorm in the jet stream. And then, you know, they had a time, 2 o'clock, that they had to be off that top. And because, you know, people are paying $60,000, you know, per person to go climb, the guides feel obligated to, they want a high success rate. And then they end up running out of oxygen, and then, you know, disaster happened. Uh-huh. And so, you know, it's just, you got to put yourself in a position where you're very disciplined about when you're coming and when you're going, and also you're not climbing in superstorms.
You know, as a fellow traveler, I've always felt that we go to see certain things, right? Whether it's Jerusalem, I just got back, or whether it's you and Mount Kili, or whatever it is. But ultimately, we see ourselves. On each of your four ascents now in these major summits, how have you seen yourself differently after each one, if that's accurate?
Well, you know, through life you get older and hopefully you're getting wiser. And it's just, it's a, I think for me, it's another evolution in my growth on really trying to find my true purpose, right? And, you know, when I was playing football, that was my true love. But you can only play for a certain period of time. And I had my run, and I'm very thankful for that. But that's what it was. And then, like so many people, you get into your craft, whatever you do. And then when you get married and you have kids, now you're tied down by, you know, the golden handcuffs that feed, just because you now are the provider for everybody. And while that was great, and I've got two beautiful daughters, you know, I'm kind of in a new place or going into a new place where, you know, as I kind of go into this new direction with climbing, it, and I didn't get into it for this reason, but it's kind of playing out this way where, you know, this is, could definitely become a career for me in terms of, you know, teaching, guiding, speaking, doing other things around this whole while being in nature. And there's nothing better, right?
Wow. What's that search like for a purpose? Because I think that's a common search that we're all on.
Yeah.
What's that like for you?
I've spent thousands of hours thinking about this and about, you know, asking the question why I'm trying to actually do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's, you know, it's everybody's passion, everybody's want is different. And I don't think it always has to be tied around that you're monetizing from it, right? So, you know, for my entire life, including now, nobody pays me to go climb. I pay people to take me climbing, right? And yet I can easily jump on my bike and go up the Santa Monica Mountains, and that doesn't cost anybody. And so there's a whole range. If you want to be in the outdoor world, you don't have to climb Mount Everest. You can go climb, you know, Mount Baldy. And I think you mentioned a word a little while ago called meditation, and everybody defines that a little bit differently, but you got to get quiet. You got to get quiet with yourself to really understand and really be honest and authentic about where you're at and where you want to go and what are your goals, right?
What do you think your fellow climbers would say about you who have ascended these 4 out of 7 summits?
Yeah, some of these guys I've climbed with in the past, they're all half my age, you know, which is, you know, who climbs. You know, certainly dedicated and driven. Probably two words that would come out. I don't think it's a surprise to anybody when, you know, they hear I've mountain biked 60 miles or, you know, done something more extreme. I think that's not out of character, mm-hmm. you know, not just the guys I've climbed with, but also with my friends. I think one of the things, the mountain guide, Mike Hamill, who's climbed the 7 summits many times, he's a guide. I think his biggest question has been, because of my size, you know, could I actually carry my own weight plus my backpack and everything else that's required to get the mountain? So that hasn't been a problem so far. And, you know, I'm hoping that this won't be a problem, you know, going down to Tanzania.
It's pretty fascinating. I mean, we continue and we can continue to set like what I like to call like new normals in our world, right? As a traveler, you take a 2-week trip to Europe and like, man, I'm badass. And you meet somebody who's been traveling for 2 years.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's possible.
Yeah.
Right. Or I'm going to go do some local hikes and you meet somebody that's done the 7 summits. And maybe that idea gets planted to you. So the question I have for you is what was that apex like, where that moment when you were like, okay, I'm going to go do the 7 summits?
Well, again, it was walking around the block, and then I started. I've got some buddies who've done it. I've got a friend or two who've done it. And then I know a guide who has a guide service outside of Mount Rainier. So I called him. I was in Georgetown at the Georgetown Inn in D.C., and I called him. I said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? And he goes, you know, well, we can help you out. And I said, well, what would you recommend as the path? So, you know, again, I got the plan. Yeah, I had an idea, which was the seed, and then I got the unleash, like, you got to get your plan together, right?
Right.
So I called him and said, he goes, you want to start with, you know, Africa, and then you want to go to Russia, and then you want to go to Australia, and you know, so he planned it out. So I'm executing exactly what he helped me plan.
So Vincent, Antarctica, and Everest are next, right?
Denali's
the next.
Yeah,
okay.
Then Vincent and Antarctica. In Antarctica, and then 2019 will be Mount Everest. And then actually something that you said something interesting a minute ago about, you know, you've been to Europe and you're for 2 weeks and you find out somebody's been traveling for a month and, you know, kind of always resetting the bar. So my new bar is the 7 summits, but I want to do something called the Grand Slam.
Ooh, what is that?
So the Grand Slam would be do the 7 summits and then you also ski to the North and South Pole.
From where?
Well, wherever you start. not Hermosa Beach.
Be fair.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's unpack that for a second. If you look back on your upbringing in Seattle as an athlete. Obviously, collegiately, you play in the NFL for a couple teams from LA to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Where did you have that sense of exploration? I mean, because you're not talking. You're talking about big stuff,
yeah.
Right? And for you, I bet it. I wonder if it even feels big. It might just feel like what's next.
Yeah. Well, understand too. I grew up in the Northwest. I grew up in Seattle. And in Seattle is where REI was created. And back in the day, you know, the two famous brothers that were running around are the Whitaker brothers. Jim Whitaker actually was the first American to climb Everest. And so, you know, between REI and between all the local legends, you know, climbing the Cascades in the Northwest to the Whitaker brothers on Rainier, you know, it's a big climbing community up there. I also climb with my dad quite a bit, just all smaller stuff. But nonetheless, he's the one who exposed it to me. And you've been up there plenty of times, so you've seen lots of mountains right around from Husky Stadium,
yeah.
Right? And so, you know, every day you go out you know, you stare at a mountain. I remember it was 1998 when I climbed Mount Rainier. And so people are like, well, why are you going to climb Mount Rainier? I'm like, because it's there and I've got to climb it. So it's just like, why wouldn't you? You can't have a big mountain and, you know, live your entire life in the state of Washington and mm-hmm. say you've never climbed it. It's a slam dunk. You have to do it.
And do you feel that now with you can't live in this great world and not have touched some of the most magical places?
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about climbing too is it always teaches you something about yourself, because the physical exertion that you have to go through, in so many cases, you're tested between the weather and between just the mental, you know, physical, everything, you know, fatigue that you go through. And then it's interesting that you watch your teammates, you know, others around you and how they fare. And I can go on and on and on and on, on about people with great aspirations, but they just, you know, the ones that make it have a certain character trait, and the guys that don't make it have a different character trait than they normally surface.
One of my favorite things to do when I travel is I come home, and I live in Venice, and I go to the Venice Beach Whole Foods, right? And you know that when you're traveling, yeah. Hiking specifically, like, there's no time for BS, right? Yeah. You cut to the core of your point, you cut to the core of a friendship. I mean, you just get there faster. Things are more passionate. There's more heat. There's just, whatever it is, it happens quicker. And I always love coming back, and I prepare myself for this, and I go into Whole Foods, and it's the epicenter of like beauty, communication, the arts, all the great stuff that we love. And everybody's got headphones in or looking at a phone. And I'm always curious of like, why are we not connecting? I really struggle when I come back. What's it like for you when you come back from solitude, from a meditative state, from a descent where you're crying, as you referenced earlier, to then come into a community like you live in the United States?
Well, I actually feel like I've never been more connected than when I am up in the mountain with people, even though there's this solitude. But in between the solitude, you know, there's just this great camaraderie. And the thing that it takes, you know, a little bit of getting used to is that you get completely unplugged. You know, you're up on the mountain, you don't have self-service, you're not checking the internet, you know, you're just nothing. You have no idea what's going on in the world for days on end. And so what ends up happening is you spend a lot of time with the people in camp finding out where they're from. And, you know, where they're from, I've climbed with people from Pakistan and India and Australia and New Zealand and Canada and all over the place. And, you know, we all come from a different spot and different perspective. And for the most part, they've all been wonderful people. It does take a certain type of mentality just to even sign up for these things. So you have to be there. But, you know, just some wonderful people and friendships have come out of this.
What have you found out about the truth of humanity on these trips? Because, right, we're in a gnarly time in the world right now, as you're going to learn when you go on this trip. I just got back from one, how our country's even perceived. But to your point of being around people from a variety of backgrounds, dialects, heritages, religions, races, genders, what have you picked up in your time exploring?
You know, that really at the end of the day, we're all people. And none of that stuff, it's usually governments, not the actual people themselves. I stay away from all political conversations, religious, you know, stuff, because it, again, it just doesn't matter. Right. It's just more about, tell me about yourself, right? Don't tell me about your government. Right. Don't tell me about religion. It, I mean, it really doesn't matter.
Right.
I mean, that's totally cool, whatever you believe, but, I'm more, tell me about your family and yeah. tell me about your kids and what drove you to become this doctor or whatever their profession is. Right. And those are the types of things that we talk about. And it's really cool, you know, just, you know, our guides, our Argentinian guides last year and, you know, just, you know, finding out how fortunate you are in many cases, right? Because we all microprocess like, oh my God, I'm living here and I feel like I'm not getting, you know, really we've got so much,
right?
Right? And you get around these other, and it just puts it relative to, you know, what you do have and how grateful you should be.
You talked about being a kid and looking up at those mountains in the Seattle community. Curious your father's influence on you.
My dad was huge. He, unfortunately, he passed away about 5-6 years ago. But he, number one, he was my biggest supporter ever. Anything that I ever wanted to do, my dreams I wanted to pursue, whether it was being an entrepreneur or playing in the NFL, you know, certainly he was, he didn't play any kind of decision making in terms of what college I was going to go to, even though we could see Husky Stadium out my parents' window. And, you know, probably more than anything, I've got two daughters, you know, one of them, Claudette, and, you know, trying to live up to his expectation or his standard of really being that parent that your kids could look up to and always depend on, mm-hmm. right? And no matter what, unconditional love.
What do you think it means to live a full life?
I think I'm still trying to figure that out. And, you know, my grandfather was very entrepreneurial. He owned some hotels and restaurants and racehorses and other things. And, he passed away when he was 83 at a racetrack. One of his horses were racing at in Canada. And the lesson learned for me was I will never, ever retire. I don't know what that means exactly, but I will always work till my grave. And, you know, to me, again, this whole notion about if you're not growing, you're dying, and really trying to push forward. And I'm kind of in this phase of my life now where even though I want to have my own pursuits and pursue my purpose around climbing, and hopefully I can monetize that. Really what that means is then create that platform so that I can give back, right? In a way that this organization that I'm going to create called the summitproject.org is all about public speaking and other things that people will pay to see. You know, proceeds will go towards whatever project. My daughter's got a form of epilepsy, my other one, not Claudette. And, you know, she's had it since she was 6 years old. And so, you know, things we take for granted, driving, riding a bicycle, playing on the monkey bars. You know, if there's a way that I can help raise money towards an organization like that to help solve one day for all people, you know, that'd be amazing. So contribution, right? Just be great. So that's where I see I want to go, but I'm not there yet. So my life is not fulfilled yet because, you know, I'm just starting this journey of trying to raise money and help others.
Wow. You've done a lot of cool things in your life, and I want to get you out of here on the last couple of questions. What you just talked about what you believe a full life is, but I'm curious for you, because you do a lot. What makes you feel most alive?
Engagement. For sure.
And when you're on a mountain, are you engaged with one step, one thought? One step, one thought. Is an engagement? Is it a relationship with each ascent? What is that engagement like?
Yeah, they're a good question. So to clarify, for me, it's more human engagement. But that human engagement is being in nature, engaging with others. And that doesn't mean, you know, you're chirping at somebody the entire time. But it's, you know, getting ready, putting on the boots, having breakfast, breaking down your tent. Hey, can you help, right? Roping up. No, not saying anything for 2 hours, and then you get to the summit, and then you're hugging, right? People that, you know, relatively you just met. And I don't know. To me, that's when I feel most alive. I feel most alive when my kids are over here and we're having Thanksgiving and we're all cooking and we're, you know, screwing something up, but it's in that engagement. So I think where, like anything, where it can be a very lonely existence is when you get, when you get isolated, right? In a place where you don't have any support and people aren't there. And that's, you know, this whole teamwork concept again resurfaces about coming together, and you can do great things when you do that.
Oh, beautiful.
I always like to ask everybody on this podcast is how do they feel about the word limits?
Well, I don't think in my case there's a whole lot of limits, right? And I would actually say a different word is limitless, right? And you know, my life is my life, and you know, if there's nothing else, the reason why I climb is not for others. I climb for myself. But the reality is, if that can help somebody else in some way, you know, realize their potential, right, or what they're meant to do, then that's awesome. And if not, not. But everybody sometimes needs somebody to look up to or whatnot. And if I can be that spark in any way, then that's a great thing.
Oh, Mark, this has been fascinating. You're about to go on a pretty radical adventure, man. How excited are you right now?
Oh, I'm so pumped up, you know. So, you know, I've climbed Kilimanjaro, as we talked about 5 years ago, but I think this one is going to be at a more satisfaction level for a lot of different reasons. Number one, I'm going with my best buddy, Jim Moore. Number two, there's other ex-NFL players that are going to be joining the group. You mentioned before Kirstie Ennis and Nate Boyer. There's actually two other military people. Kirstie, you didn't mention. She was a gunner in Afghanistan, and she had her leg blown off, and so she has a prosthetic now. So they've assigned me to help her get up this mountain. So I don't know if I'm going to be pulling her or pushing her, but you know, she'll do fine up until summit day, and then it gets steep, and you know, that's going to be an interesting how that dynamic plays out. But one way or the other, if I have to carry her, I will get her to the top. And then there's another guy who was a Green Beret who got hit by shrapnel and lost his vision. So we have a guy that's blind and a girl that lost a leg, you know, as part of this. And then, you know, the kicker is that we're going to visit one of these villages. They've built now 17 wells out of their goal of 32. And we're going to see what, you know, our impact on raising money and awareness has done for this community. It's just going to be magical.
Wow. Wow. I want to come. Yeah. This is awesome.
You should come.
Yeah. Next time. Thank you for the time. How can people stay in touch? You've got a great social platform and presence. What's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
Yeah. So if anybody goes on Facebook or Instagram, they can find me at NFL, the number 27 Summits, NFL 27 Summits. So that's all it is. Pretty simple. You know, it's what I'm doing. I'm playing the NFL. I'm trying to climb the 7 Summits. So a little number 2 in between. And, you know, that's all a bunch of photos, and you can contact me through there. And, you know, I'd love to hear from anybody.
Beautiful. We will make sure we link everything in the blog. I mean, this was fascinating. There's so many visuals that I'm taking away from this, from you walking around Santa Monica to walking and crying on your way down to having Thanksgiving with your family. So thanks for opening up.
Yeah.
Appreciate the
absolutely
time. Beautiful. So that's Mark Pattison. As we always end this podcast with the same phrase, the only limits that you have in life are the ones you set yourself.